Is infertility a disease, a condition, a symptom, or a disability? This aspect is highly debated, and there are very diverse opinions on it. According to the World Health Organization, it defines infertility to be a disease of the reproductive system by the failure to achieve a clinical pregnancy after 12 months or more of regular unprotected intercourse. But others say it's not a disease, rather it's a disability or a symptom. There may be anatomical or physiological anomalies, or it is the person's fault for waiting too long as fertility declines with age. Some can conceive with one partner, but not with another, etc. So in these specific cases, infertility could be considered not a disease. But why does this matter? It matters because governments are unlikely to fund infertility if it is not considered a disease. And the cost of infertility without aid is a high price to bear for most families today. I'm Christy I, and you're watching The Cost of Everything. And today, we're going to be discussing the sensitive topic of the cost of infertility and how this is becoming a worldwide problem. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, infertility rates are rising. About 9% of men and 11% of women of reproductive age in the U.S. have experienced fertility problems. Southern and Eastern Europe and East Asia have some of the lowest fertility rates, with 1.5 children per woman. And while it is unclear what is behind this trend, one hypothesis is that endocrine-disrupting chemicals or environmental factors may play a role here. So what is the cost of infertility? Not only can the mental and emotional cost not be quantified, but it can get really expensive for those wanting to start a family. There are many options on the market, but it comes at a real financial burden. People can choose to pursue intrauterine insemination, in vitro fertilization, surrogacy, or adoption. And these costs can reach six figures in many cases. If one goes for intrauterine insemination, which involves placing sperm inside a woman's uterus to increase the chances of fertilization, that can cost up to $2,000 per cycle, depending on the clinic, the type of medication used, and any follow-up blood work and monitoring. For IVF, the average cost of a single cycle, which includes ovarian stimulation, egg retrieval, and the embryo transfer, can range anywhere from $15,000 to $30,000, depending on where you live. This figure doesn't even include the price of necessary fertility drugs and testing, which can add up to an additional $3,000 per cycle, not to mention the expenses associated with pregnancy and a hospital delivery. Each cycle takes almost 3 months for a full round, and most couples that have to undergo IVF due to infertility or miscarriages on average go through 3 rounds to have a successful embryo transfer. Like other extremely delicate medical procedures, IVF involves highly trained professionals and sophisticated laboratories and equipment. Adoption is always another option, but that too is expensive. The average cost of adoption is around $50,000, as it includes the medical expenses for the birth mother, attorney fees, social workers, and counselors. There are also orphanage fees and country fees if it's an international adoption too. And it is not always a guarantee that each adoption attempt will be successful. Surrogacy is the most expensive option and the biggest variable depending on whether or not the surrogate is being paid. In situations where a family member carries the baby, that can actually save quite a bit on cost. But if you're getting an experienced carrier, then costs for a surrogate can range from $30,000 to $60,000. And that's only for a single child. If the surrogate is carrying twins or multiples, then the fee can be even higher. And for more, let's bring in Pamela Hirsch, co-founder of BabyQuest. So, Pamela, there's a big personal element to the cost of fertility to families. So, what is the issue and why is it so close to you?
About 12 or 13 years ago, I was totally unfamiliar with infertility, with the cost or anything related, because I was completely involved in another business. At that time, our daughter, who was 28, she and her husband decided to try to have a child. Fast forward many months, many long months of IUIs, switching to IVFs. Four IVFs each time, many embryos were retrieved, and each IVF was successful until the ninth week, when after hearing a heartbeat, she suffered a miscarriage. She was later told that she could not carry her own child. So this became, fast forward, she now has two children, each carried by a surrogate. This opened the world of infertility to me and made me realize what the costs were, and made me also realize that there wasn't much help for those people who couldn't afford it. We were very fortunate financially to be able to help our daughter and son-in-law, and so many people are not. And this is what made me create Baby Quest, to help those people who cannot afford the cost of IVF, surrogacy, embryo donation, anything associated with assisted reproduction.
Absolutely. And many people think that IVF is a safety net, and they put off having kids until much later in life. So how does that affect things?
That's only one factor. Yes, that's true. There are many women who want to establish their career, do their education, and establish a career before they want to start having a family, which is definitely understandable. But there are other factors that are contributing to the increasing number of IVF. The availability of genetic testing. People who are struggling and who have or who are carriers for diseases like cystic fibrosis or Tay-Sachs, these diseases can now be eliminated from the fear of passing them on to future generations because you can do genetic testing. That creates the necessity for IVF, to do genetic testing to know which embryos are free of the disease that you want to eliminate. Another a reason for IVF and for the increase of it is same-sex parents. Two women or two men, you know, involved in same-sex relationships who desire to have children, obviously they need physical intervention, sperm donation, egg donation, to enable them to have a child. So all of those are contributing factors to what creates an increase in the number of IVFs.
And does insurance cover IVF? Because infertility is a disease, and one would think that it should be fully covered.
One would think that. That is quite an assumption, because even states in the United States where states mandate coverage, it's very easy for an employer to opt out of covering certain things. Sometimes employers will cover infertility just up to the diagnosis, where the person finds out that he or she has a problem, but yet there's no coverage beyond that, and that's where the expense starts. So it is really difficult. It's very advantageous, obviously, for a woman or a man to have insurance coverage for IVF through their employer. And yes, that seems to be a trend, and especially is a trend that makes an employer more attractive if that employer offers IVF or fertility coverage to employees. But it's not a guarantee. And so many people still do not have proper insurance coverage in covering infertility. And also, even those people we found who have lost their fertility because of cancer, you would think that would be a given. Definitely their fertility treatment should be covered. Not true. Often people who have TRICARE insurance from the military, you would think that, again, they've served the country. They should have insurance. TRICARE should cover cover IVF or infertility, and it does not. So many people are left, whether you consider this a condition or not, many people are left without proper insurance coverage for infertility, which is why Baby Quest has been able to help in that realm.
Yes, and are there certain groups of people or ethnicities that are more prone to infertility than others?
I really don't know the statistics on that. I know that Baby Quest strives to respect diversity. Our recipients show a cross-section of diversity, and that's very important to us. And we do get applications from all minority groups. As far as statistics, that I really can't talk about.
Yes, and I guess which countries are experiencing declining populations as a result of declining birth rates? And do you think that this is going to be a problem in the future?
Again, you know, I am just more concerned rather than with the statistics and the worldly, you know, the implications around the world. I'm just really more of an expert in IVF, surrogacy, and in the United States, what it costs, who needs it, and how to help those who are in need.
All right, thank you so much, Pamela, but stick around because we have some more to discuss after the break. And when we come back, who are the most affected by infertility and what is causing infertility? We'll have that after the break.
I look forward to talking to you all.
That technology should work for people.
A robot must obey the orders given it by human beings, except where such orders would conflict with the first law.
Show your identification.
We should be very careful about artificial intelligence.
The point, obviously, is to create trust rather than fear.
I would like to take on various jobs.
I mean, with artificial intelligence, we are summoning the demon.
A robot must protect its own existence as own existence.
Hi, I'm Rick Sanchez, and I'm here to plead with you, whatever you do, do not watch my new show. Seriously, why watch something that's so different? Why listen to opinions that you won't get anywhere else? Look, if it pleases you to have the State Department, the CIA, weapons makers, multi-billion dollar corporations choose your facts for you, go ahead. Why change? And whatever you do, don't watch my show. Stay mainstream, because I'm probably going to make you uncomfortable. My show is called Direct Impact. But again, you probably don't want to watch it, because it might just change the way you think.
Hi, my name is Frank. I'm originally from Philadelphia. Got in the movement in 88. I was 13 going on 14.
We were violent towards those people because we believed that we were the superior race. We were here first, and this is our country.
Being part of that movement, I got to feel a sense of power when I felt powerless. I got attention when I felt invisible and accepted when I felt unlovable.
So Life After Hate is an organization that was founded by four ex-skinhead, neo-Nazi, white supremacists in the US and Canada. And they found each other, and they knew that they wanted to help other guys get out.
There's two parts to getting out of a violent extremist group. The first part is disengagement, which is where you leave the social group. And then the next part is de-radicalization, where the belief systems and the ideology are removed.
It was very impactful when someone finally came along with no fear, no judgment. He heard my story, did nothing to challenge it, but validated it.
Estimated that 48 million couples and 186 million individuals worldwide live with infertility. The consequences of involuntary childlessness are usually more drastic in low and middle income countries when compared to Western societies, particularly for women. This is because many families in these low income countries completely depend on their children for economic survival. Unfortunately, these low and middle income countries are some of the most impacted by infertility as they have less options to seek out treatments like IVF. infertility is popularly imagined to mainly affect white, middle-class women in the middle-class global north. But in fact, the highest rates of infertility in the world are in the global south. Health systems and population policies often reflect and perpetuate this misconception. Over the last 50 years, fertility rates have dropped drastically around the world. In 1952, the average global family had 5 children. Now, they have less than 3. So what caused this shift? Well, there are 3 main factors here at play that contributed to this. First, you have women's empowerment, particularly in education and the workforce. Secondly, you have lower child mortality. And finally, there's the increased cost to raising children. Research has found that these 3 factors are correlated with lower fertility. Correlated, not causing it. But what's causing it? While we don't know the reason for declining fertility rates, there's a range of social and medical factors contributing to it. Smoking, poor nutrition, excessive alcohol, and being overweight are known to have the biggest impact on fertility and the chances of conception. While a global trend is that couples are having children later, the chances of infertility increases with age, especially with women. Around 13% of couples have trouble getting pregnant with the woman is under 30 years old. That number increases to 22% when the woman is between 30 and 39 years. And this isn't all the woman's fault either. The man is also responsible for infertility as well. A recent study in the Journal of Human Reproduction Update suggests that the average sperm concentration fell from an estimated 101 million per milliliter to 49 million per milliliter between 1973 and 2018. This represents a drop of over 50%. Total sperm count fell by 62% during the same period, and the trend appears to be a worldwide phenomenon as it takes into account the Americas, Europe, Asia, and Africa. The data from the study shows a decline of around 2.5% each year in mean sperm concentration since 2000. Sperm concentration and counts are a good marker of a man's fertility as well as mortality and morbidity rates as well. In other words, men with lower sperm counts have higher chances of becoming sick or dying at a younger age. While this is alarming, it is preventable. And there's growing evidence that plastics, pesticides, herbicides, heavy metals, toxic gases, air pollution, and poor lifestyle choices like smoking are all tied to abnormal sperm count. And for more, let's bring in again Pamela Hirsch, co-founder of BabyQuest. So Pamela, many people don't realize how difficult it can be to get pregnant. Why isn't reproduction health knowledge more widespread?
It is a shame. And I think there is a stigma attached to infertility, which has been in existence for a long time. Women thought that it was not feminine or whatever to be to admit that they could not, that a woman could not have children. It was an embarrassment. And one of the reasons that social media and the internet has really actually been helpful in this is to open the conversation. There are so many support groups that are showing women and men that infertility is not something that you have to face by yourself, that you are not alone, that there are other people who are struggling with the same thing. And just like other organizations, BabyQuest really attempts to destigmatize the whole issue of infertility. It's amazing when we get applicants, for example, from couples where it's male factor infertility. And to us, it's really important that the man be able to verbalize and say and admit, yes, I'm part of the equation. I was not able, you know, something was wrong with me, not just, you know, my wife or whatever. And causing part of the issue in our not being able to conceive. And I think just the idea that BabyQuest and other groups are opening the conversation and making people talk about infertility, it's making it more of a comfortable topic, not something that should be swept under the carpet and viewed as an embarrassment. So I think that's a trend that has been actually very positive.
Yes, what do you think is contributing to this low fertility phenomenon? Is it simply education and lifestyle, or is it something more?
As we had talked about before, I think a lot part of it is perhaps women wanting, knowing that their options do exist and delaying child conceiving or getting pregnant till they've established their careers. I know that there's a lot of discussion about hormones and how that affects the body, and perhaps that's been a problem with conception. I just know that, thank goodness for modern science, because I know there are a lot of couples in the past who've just had to give up. They've tried to conceive. There were not the scientific innovations that exist today, and they had no options. Today, there are options. There are options for people who want to eliminate genetic disease. There are people who have issues that are totally unexplained, like unexplained infertility. There's egg donation, there's sperm donation, there's embryo donation, there's surrogacy. There are so many options today to allow people to become parents. There's also obviously adoption. BabyQuest does not deal with adoption, but there are organizations out there that do. So our theory is, no matter how your family is formed, you want to get to the end result of having a family, if that's what you want.
Absolutely. And what are the statistics behind the growth of IVF compared to, say, 5, 10, or even 20 years ago?
It is increasing. And there are other things, other ways that IVF is becoming more expensive and yet more successful is the innovations in genetic testing. We're able to learn so much more about the health of the future embryo. I know for myself, I happen to be a carrier of colon cancer. And I know now, rather than passing it on, knowing that my daughters, actually one did inherit the gene and one did not. But now, if I were having a child, it's possible to test for some of the diseases like colon cancer or BRCA gene and know that you can eliminate passing this along, which is such a blessing.
And do you think that kids are almost like the new economic status symbol nowadays? Because it seems like the more affluent families, they're the ones that are able to have access to fertility care, and they're the ones that are able to have and support more kids.
You know, one of the first things that I wrote in our BabyQuest mission is the fact that infertility, or the solution to infertility, is really an issue of class, unfortunately. Yes, I realized when our family was financially able to help our daughter conceive, I realized that many people are not as fortunate. And yes, it is totally unfortunate that infertility treatments are not across the board covered by insurance. And yet it does lead to the fact that those who are more affluent are able to afford fertility treatments more easily.
All right, thank you so much for your time, Pamela. There are big losers when it comes to infertility. This affects many families trying to have kids, but it also affects society too, as in the next 50 years, there will be less and less young people who will be able to work and support the increasing bulge of elderly folk. This would present challenges for government programs that would need to support the elderly, and there will also be less working age people to pay taxes and less spending power. But perhaps the biggest losers here are the women. Infertility is also and often blamed on the woman, even when it may be the man who is at fault. This is especially true for women in low and middle income countries who do not have children and are subject to ostracism and isolation and suffer economically when their partners leave them. They also have less access to infertility care. Unfortunately, it is the less developed countries and low-income countries that have some of the highest infertility prevalence rates, between 6.9 to 9.3%. I'm Christy I. Thanks for watching, and we'll see you back here next time on The Cost of Everything.